name is Michael McCusker. The re-election of Donald Trump as president of the USA amidst his indictment for crimes committed during his first tenure badly shakes faith in the presumed national myth of the intelligence and integrity of the American people and process. Trump's new administration will most likely be among the most egregious attempts to dismantle American democracy. As Trump has warned, as president, he will attempt to ensure that Americans will lose their rights to vote, and not to mention birthright citizenship. And he will be El Supremo, more or less, and his malignant political family is empirical heirs. The danger of Trump's continuance reaches far beyond U.S. boundaries of geography, but also of time. The irreversible eradication of biological life, if human pollution of Earth is allowed to continue virtually unabated for no other purpose than the privilege and material profit of a generation at the expense of future generations and the planet itself. Trump's new administration will most likely be the most egregious attempts to dismantle American democracy. The danger of Trump's reappearance as the USA's president reaches far beyond USA boundaries of geography, but also of time. The irreversible eradication of biological life, if humanity's wanton pollution of Earth is allowed to continue virtually unabated for perhaps no other purpose than the privilege of a generation at the expense of future generations. Trump is the pivot point. And so, in her own unique manner, is Greta Thunberg, who continues to mobilize younger generations to preserve Mother Gaia's fertility, the millennial millions who will occupy Earth's future. Twice, Trump ran against women for the presidency, and that singular prejudice against a woman as president might be exactly and only why he was elected each time. Trump might think he is a financial titan, but he is the grandson of an Alaska Gold Rush whorehouse parvenueer. Napoleon Trump, notorious draft dodger, who envisions himself America with a K, warlord supremo. The struggle for equity, justice, and independence is never ending, usually losing more than gained, yet an eternal resistance, primarily because everything valuable about human life is lost without opposition and counteraction to demagoguery and dictatorial oppression. Life, liberty, and independence, the eternal triad of human hope and aspiration of the ages. And now, from the editorial board of the New York Times, Trump can't ditch birthright citizenship, and he shouldn't want to. President-elect Donald Trump apparently believes that a single person, himself, can exercise discretion over the rights of people born in the United States. The 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution declares that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States, quote, unquote. In a weekend interview with NBC News' Meet the Press, however, Trump treated the clause as changeable, if we can, through executive action, quote unquote. Doing so, he said, would make it easier for the government to remove families of immigrants living in the United States illegally that include children who were born here and are, therefore, citizens. Trump conceded in a nod to that pesky constitutional text that, well, maybe we have to go back to the people, quote unquote. But he has taken verbal aim at birthright citizenship many times before. And so, before he takes the country any further down this path, it is worth remembering why birthright citizenship is not ridiculous, as Mr. Trump claims, but a defining aspect of this country's special national character. The late Washington Post columnist Michael Gerson said it best when he wrote in 2018, "Any political movement that regards the plain meaning of the 14th Amendment as an obstacle to its political intentions has earned a great deal of suspicion," quote unquote. Ratified in 1868 to solidify the political transformations for which hundreds of thousands of Union soldiers had given their lives, the amendment refuted the belief that a person's race or ethnicity should determine citizenship. Its authors intended to undo the Supreme Court's shameful Dred Scott decision, which held that no person of African ancestry could ever claim U.S. citizenship. It offers a clear, simple standard for determining who is an American, by which the color of one's skin and their ancestry are irrelevant. Critics of birthright citizenship often contend that the phrase "subject to the jurisdiction thereof," quote unquote, offers wiggle room for the president to determine who deserves the 14th Amendment's protections. Not so. All people living in the United States, even those here illegally, are, quote, subject to, unquote, U.S. law. Moreover, historians widely agree that the phrase was intended to exempt two groups of people from birthright citizenship: children of foreign diplomats and members of Native American tribes that maintained sovereign status under treaties with the U.S. government. Native Americans acquired birthright citizenship by statute in 1924. Authors of the 14th Amendment were aware of anti-immigrant sentiments and supported it regardless. Senator John Conness of California, when presented with concerns that children of Chinese migrants would be granted citizenship under the amendment, made his position clear. "We are entirely ready to accept the provision proposed in this constitutional amendment that the children born here of Mongolian parents shall be declared by the Constitution of the United States to be entitled to civil rights and to equal protection before the law with others." And that was a quote. A triumph over racism and xenophobia, the 14th Amendment also marked the beginning of a global movement to embrace birthright citizenship rather than determining citizenship by ethnicity or national origin. Despite Trump's repeated assertions that the United States is the only, quote unquote, country with birthright citizenship, dozens of nations have followed Americans' examples, including almost all countries in the Western Hemisphere, limiting the number of stateless people around the world without constitutional rights. This is the history Trump seeks to undo via executive fiat. Doing so might please anti-immigrant groups that have long argued that birthright citizenship creates a perverse incentive for immigrants or visitors to have children in the United States, what they disparage as anchor babies or birth tourism. It is true that some people have exploited the law, but having citizen children does not protect undocumented immigrant parents from deportation. Children cannot sponsor their parents until they are 21, and they must be able to support them financially. Concerns about these rare instances do not justify throwing out birthright citizenship. Trump is correct that removing immigrants with deportation orders often results in years-long legal battles. But the solution is not to revoke rights that Congress expressly extended more than a century ago. It is to reform the country's immigration system and provide needed resources, more immigration judges to process claims, more money and staff for immigration enforcement agencies, more detention space, more airplanes to facilitate deportations. Trump has signaled some openness to working with Democrats in Congress to provide such resources, but threatening the cornerstone of American citizenship law does not promote good faith negotiations. Fortunately, any attempt to end or limit birthright citizenship would probably fail in court. By harping on the idea anyway, Trump might please his base and scare some first-generation Americans, but he also reveals a misunderstanding of the nation's history and what makes it great. And now, the GOP's top priority for 2025, repeal the laws of arithmetic, is by Catherine Rampell for The Washington Post. What will Republicans prioritize when they regain their government trifecta next month? A tax overhaul, energy production, border security? Nope. The GOP's first order of business, getting rid of math. The fractious Republican Party can agree on few things these days, but one of them is near unanimous frustration with the pesky laws of arithmetic, that cutting future taxes would reduce future tax revenue, for instance, perpetually aggrieves them. A large chunk of the 2017 Trump tax cuts expires next year, and extending these provisions will be extremely expensive. That's why Republicans scheduled them to sunset in the first place, to lower the price tag. The Congressional Budget Office, the legislature's official scorekeeper, estimates a full extension would add more than $4 trillion to the federal debt over the next decade. That is true even after considering any potential growth effects on the U.S. economy. It might also understate the full cost of GOP tax plans, since it doesn't include Donald Trump's other pricey promises, slashing corporate taxes, eliminating taxes on Social Security, overtime, and tips. Those would add trillions more in red ink, awkward for a party that fancies itself fiscally responsible. Republicans' solution, invent a new math, Cold War style. Incoming Senate Finance Committee Chair Mike Crapo, Idaho Republican, says that since tax rates are currently low, extending these expiring rates another decade should not count as costing anything because it would not feel like a change. Crapo's tax writing counterpart in the House, Representative Jason T. Smith, a Missouri Republican, agrees. This is like saying, even though your car lease is up this month, leasing another car should count as free because you got used to having a car. Alas, that is not how budgets work. Elsewhere, Crapo has said that Republicans have not paid for similar tax cuts before, so they sure as heck should not start now. Indeed, he opposed an earlier fiscally responsible bipartisan deal to expand the child tax credit and certain business breaks because it was paid for. The CBO's current budget scoring methods don't support Crapo's fiscal fantasies. But not to worry, House Republican leadership has also been scrounging around for dirt on the CBO in an apparent attempt to preemptively discredit their referees. This is hardly the only recent case of GOP ledgering math. On Meet the Press last Sunday, Trump complained that the United States is allegedly subsidizing Canada to the tune of over $100 billion a year, quote unquote, and subsidizing Mexico for almost $300 billion, quote unquote. He appeared to be referring to the size of our bilateral trade deficit with these countries. Some problems with that. First, paying companies abroad for the products they sell to you is not a subsidy in the same way that paying your local supermarket for its bananas is not a subsidy. It's a transaction. Does Trump expect Mexico to just give us avocados free? Second is a subtler, more sinister issue, the specific numbers Trump used. Trump's figures do not match the official statistics put out by the U.S. Census Bureau or the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. They are much larger. This is probably because Trump and his MAGA allies have joined forces with some protectionist progressives in trying to change how trade figures are calculated to exaggerate the size of trade deficits. The short explanation is they want to stop counting goods that are first imported and then re-exported as exports without making a symmetric change for imports. This change may sound small and technical, but it would massively distort how we measure and understand economic changes, and is symptomatic of Trump's habit of torturing the data until it confesses. Trump's trade guru, Peter Navarro, tried to bully career statisticians into changing how they measured deficits during Trump's first term, but they resisted. Navarro is coming back for the second term. It is Russell Vought, serving again as director of Trump's Office of Management and Budget, an architect of Protecting 2025. Vought says he will force federal agencies entrusted with producing reliable, nonpartisan, independent statistics to bow to the president's will. You can apply the concept of destroying independence at every agency, Vought told Tucker Carlson last month. I saw in aspects of OMB with regard for who gets to make the decisions on statistics. There are little pockets of independence that have to be just, we got to remove those. Indeed, Trump was frequently aggravated by his lack of control over official metrics last time around. He hated that anyone measured the spread of COVID-19. If we stopped testing right now, we would have very few cases of any, he proclaimed in June 2020. He blew up an agricultural statistical agency that evaluated his trade war's impact on farmers. He tried to redefine poverty so that fewer people would count as poor under his watch. Likewise, for pollution deaths. These are but a few examples of Trump's prior book cooking efforts. They hint at what the president-elect, emboldened by a subservient GOP and friendlier courts, is more likely to succeed at this time, taking away the objective numbers that businesses rely on to make decisions and that voters need to hold their elected officials accountable. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer of this program. My sister, Mary Anthonina, youngest of us three McCusker siblings, has died. She graciously allowed me to share her Waldport home on the Central Oregon coast this past decade, following my economic exile from Astoria. She was, emphatically, the person I have loved since her birth, and no one else I have respected more. This past November 8th, she became 77, and I truly wish that she would have outlived me, because I have known since her birth she was a superior soul. She died this past Tuesday, and an ad hoc wake of our rural neighbors filled the house just above the ocean, south of Waldport. It's just the dog and me now. He is a rescue dog, a golden, shaggy dog of a breed sired to guard Tibetan temples.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.